Darren, we're standing in your kitchen at the moment, which I think would have to be the one room in your house I've observed that doesn't have a carnivorous plant in it, although I'm sure you're going to prove me wrong. You're already looking
at... There would be fridge magnets from my travels and... There'd be something here.
Yeah. I'm sure you're right. We've already passed tanks, literally full up of carnivorous plants. We've passed bookcases where the only books on them are on carnivorous plants. And I'm peering out your kitchen window and I can see a couple of good square metres just full of what looks like pitcher plants. Do you want to take me out and give me a tour?
Yeah, sure. We'll do outside first.
Yeah, I'd like that. We're standing in your backyard now, and there's just dozens and dozens of pots full of what looks to me like pitcher plants.
Correct, yeah, just stuff that I've accumulated. I will say that a lot of the stuff out here is not my good stuff, using abbreviations. This is basically just a place to put them before I split them up, pot them up, do whatever. Most of these pots have multiple plants in them, and come summertime I'll split them up, give them their own individual pots and try and find homes for them because I don't have room. Pitcher plants really can sort of mean a few different species. There are several kinds of traps that carnivorous plants use, and the pitcher or the funnel-shaped trap is used by several of them. These that you see here that aren't looking their best, it is the middle of winter, it's their rest time. They're just chilling out, so to speak. These are American Sarracenia, and these are very commonly seen in your garden shops and places like that. Usually a lot of the time they don't know how to look after them that well, and people sort of say to me that yes, you can buy them on the cheap but they die. Well, no, they don't. You just got to know what to do with them, and once that happens they will happily flourish and you will have dozens. They come from basically Canada right down into Florida. They come down across the Mississippi and they're not tropical. People think that these Sarracenia here are tropical plants. They're not. They're, yes, down in Texas, Alabama, Georgia, top of Florida in the panhandle there, it is very warm, but it still gets cold in the wintertime, and these plants want the winter. They need the break. So the more hardy ones that go right up into the middle of Canada, they will spend their winter quite happily under several feet of snow, and that's what nature wants for them. They appreciate it. I've got plants right now in the crisper of my fridge. I'm just experimenting with not leaving them outside, stick them in the fridge, see if it makes any difference at all.
So the first thing for people, if they're thinking of growing pitcher plants, is A, outside. I also notice you've got them sitting in a couple of inches of water.
Yep, they always need to be wet. So I have here these big trays that I got at my local tip shop or whatever you've got wherever you are, and they were just the right size, 5 foot by 12 or whatever, to put a couple of inches of water in, and I can just throw pots in willy-nilly and I don't have to water very often at all. And they love it. If they've got sun and they've got water, they've got that seasonal variation between the heat of the summer and the cold of the winter, and they will just flourish.
And we're talking about pitcher plants, once again, plants here that originate in North America. What might surprise a lot of people is that we actually have a lot of native Tasmanian carnivorous plants, don't we?
We do. We don't have pitcher plants here. We only have the two varieties. We have the sundews, the little sticky ones that you'll see out and about, and we have utricularia, commonly called a bladderwort, that you do not grow them for what they look like in a pot. You grow them for the flowers. They have incredibly beautiful, showy flowers, but they have traps under the ground, so they're not really something to look at and appreciate the trapping functions. You grow them for the amazing flowers that come up in the springtime.
Because we're talking here in Hobart, but I know in the past you've told me that we could travel, 10 minutes, 15 minutes out of the city and come across them?
Yeah, very much so, very much so. We get people travel down here to see Tasmanian plants, whatever, and, if I'm around, I'll pick them up at the airport, and it's like, how far do we got to go to see a plant? And I can drive them, I think, 2 minutes from the airport, pull over, there we go. It's that easy.
And most people would have no idea that that's the case.
I didn't know that was the case until recently. I had a friend tell me where some were down near Cambridge, and, yeah, beautiful.
How much do we actually know about the origins of Tasmanian carnivorous plants?
Well, origins. We have one endemic one that's found only here. And there's still some debate on the scientific nature of it, whether or not it's related to another one we have here. But it's a really nice, big, showy plant. And if you're down the Harz Mountains, you'll see them by the absolute thousands. But they grow nowhere else in the world. A lot of our plants here also grow in New Zealand, some in Victoria. So we're not talking about a very exclusive part of the world. We have plants here that basically are reasonably common. We have some here in Tasmania that are technically endangered that are common in other parts of Australia, especially in Victoria.
And do we know how far back carnivorous plants, not necessarily Tasmanian carnivorous plants, but do we know how far back their origins stretch? Are we talking sort of Cretaceous, Jurassic period?
Look, as I'm just an enthusiastic amateur, the science of all this, you know, I'm not a trained botanist. I can't sort of say for sure. However, there are examples going back millions of years that they're found in amber and they look exactly like they do now. It's gone back a long, long time. Records go back some millions and millions of years.
And in terms of, because you've got this incredible collection here of carnivorous plants from all over the world, are there carnivorous plant enthusiasts, experts overseas who would be collecting Tasmanian carnivorous plants?
Oh, yes, there's great demand. It's not so much the plant itself with a lot of collectors, it's where it's from. And they can have the same plant, but it's from half a dozen different places around the world, around a particular state. There may be a subtle variation between, say, a plant that I've noticed down at Cambridge, and if I've stopped roadside at Canara Junction, there is one particular little patch up there of beautiful brown orange plants that look completely different to the ones down here. So in a lot of cases it's more location and the subtle differences that different regions produce than what it is itself.
Now Darren, we've got Peter Kundal and Chris Wisby breathing down our necks, which is probably what you can hear in the background. But before we go, I have to get you to show me your tanks inside.
Oh, yeah.
Now, people will spend a lot of money on tanks and heaters and humidifiers, stuff like that. I find that I had a guy at work who's a good lady wife, used to have tropical fish, and every now and again she'd dispose of a 4-foot fish tank, which I would happily accept. And I find just a cheap fluoro batten of a couple of lights, nothing special. Some people spend a lot of money on lights. Nah, I just go straight in the local hardware shop and get a little batten, and gives me plenty of light to grow what I... These are mostly South American, what are known as Heliumphora, one of the other funnel type plants, but a more primitive version of the Sarracenia that people are familiar with. I'm not a crazy enthusiast that's going to spend thousands of dollars buying, you know, split level tank. It's
you just have thousands of plants around your house, in the backyard, in the home.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah,
that's all. Completely normal. Nothing to see here.
All the guys at work's kids have all got plants because I just need the room. Every now and again, I've got to split up a pot. And generally, I want, if it's a particular one, I will want one, maybe two of it, but then suddenly I've got 12. What am I going to do with them? Ring up the guys at work, see if their kids want anything for the backyard. So,
and Darren, we haven't even touched on your travels today, and I'm going to invite myself back so that we can, whether you like it or not, frankly. But before we go, I do have to ask you about an incredibly rare sundew you have in this tank.
Ah, yes, yes. At the moment, there is a trial going on around the world of a sundew that was just recently discovered. Actually, no, it was described recently scientifically. It was discovered a few years ago, and it's out back of Whoop in Brazil, and they found this plant and thought, that's pretty cool, and they took photos and they put it on Facebook. And a colleague of mine who now lives in Miami, who's like the guru and that sort of thing, went, nah, that's new. That is so new. And it's been referred to as the Facebook sundew. And it's now officially described, and some seed was collected last year and disseminated around the world for experienced growers around the world to try and figure out how to get this thing to grow in captivity, because the first initial few seeds that went to very experienced growers didn't go so well. So they collected enough last year to spread around the world, and because I've got cold conditions here in Tassie, they wanted to know how cold this thing can go. So I got some of the seed. I've got some outside. It's in a greenhouse. It's protected. It's not in, you know, the full blast of winter, but it's not dying. And I've got a couple of strays inside in the Healy tanks because they grow close to Helium 4 in the wild. So I thought, oh, if the Healy's like it, let's see if a couple of strays can come inside and flourish, and they're doing quite all right. So at the end of this trial, everyone around the world will put all their findings into a big pile and say, okay, people, when these things become widely available, this is what works. Once we know what to do with them, they won't become commercially available like a Sarracenia, but they will be around if you know, if you want to have a go at them. They will be difficult to grow, but we can give you a good clue. You don't want to spend good money on a plant you know you're going to kill. And I think I was the first person in Australia that got it, thanks to the vagaries of Australia Post. It got to Tasmania before it got to a lot of other people on the mainland. So they're all going, I haven't got my seed yet, haven't got my seed yet. And I'm going, mine's already in. So Christmas Eve 2016 was when I put mine in. And hopefully some years down the track, I'll get some sort of present out of it.
Because 6 months later, it's still tiny.
Oh, yeah. This thing grows very slowly. And there's one guy I know of in Brazil that grows one at his place, and he's had it from the very first batch of seed, about 4 or 5 years old, and it's no more than a foot tall.
And did you want to do the honours and throw to Mr. Kundal?
Oh, I don't think I'm worthy to throw to Peter, but for those of you that are there and listening, I'm going to throw to Peter. Thank you.